The psychological thriller, A Flicker in the Dark, has captivated readers since its 2021 debut, launching Stacey Willingham into literary stardom. This haunting exploration of generational trauma became an instant New York Times bestseller and was selected for Reese Witherspoon's book club, with the film rights quickly acquired by Emma Stone's production company. What makes this story so compelling is its unflinching look at how the shadows of childhood trauma follow us into adulthood, particularly through the eyes of a serial killer's daughter. In an era fascinated by true crime podcasts and documentaries, Willingham's fiction taps into our collective obsession with understanding the psychology behind horrific acts while asking a chilling question: how well do we really know the people we love? Chloe Davis carries the heaviest of burdens, one that has shaped every aspect of her existence. At 12 years old, her life in Brobridge, Louisiana, the self-proclaimed crawfish capital of the world, was forever altered when six teenage girls disappeared over one sweltering summer. The small-town tragedy became personal horror when Chloe discovered a hidden collection of trinkets in her father's shed: hair ribbons, friendship bracelets, and small personal items belonging to each victim. This evidence implicated her own father, Richard Dick Davis, as the serial killer who had terrorized their community. The discovery not only destroyed her family, but also stripped away any semblance of childhood innocence, replacing it with a legacy of trauma and suspicion. 20 years later, Chloe has meticulously rebuilt her life in Baton Rouge. She's established herself as a respected psychologist specializing in trauma cases, drawing on her personal experience to help others navigate their own darkness. Her engagement to Daniel Briggs, a charismatic defense attorney from Old Money, seems to represent everything she's fought to achieve: stability, respectability, and a future untainted by her past. She's created a carefully curated existence 90 miles from her hometown, complete with a modernist house and a reputation for professional excellence. But the past refuses to remain buried. Chloe's carefully constructed world begins to fracture when 15-year-old Aubrey Gravino vanishes without a trace. The disappearance alone is disturbing enough, but when Lacey Deckler, one of Chloe's own patients, also goes missing, the parallels become impossible to ignore. The timing feels orchestrated with cruel precision, occurring just weeks before the 20th anniversary of her father's arrest. The similarities to her father's murder spree are chilling and methodical. Both victims are teenage girls. Both disappeared on their way home from after-school activities, and both seem to have vanished without struggle, exactly like her father's victims 2 decades ago. Chloe's psychological training proves to be both a blessing and a curse. Her professional understanding of trauma and victimhood allows her to analyze patterns and behaviors with clinical precision, but it also amplifies her anxiety and paranoia to debilitating levels. She increasingly relies on a dangerous cocktail of Xanax and wine to function, writing unauthorized prescriptions under her fiancé's name, a professional transgression that could cost her her license and freedom. Her relationship with her younger brother, Cooper, remains fractured by their shared trauma, marked by long silences and unspoken accusations. Their mother exists in a minimally conscious state in a care facility, the result of a suicide attempt that followed her husband's arrest. And Richard Dick Davis himself remains an inescapable presence in Angola prison, sending occasional letters that Chloe can't bring herself to open but can't bear to destroy. This monstrous legacy infiltrates every relationship and decision in her life, leaving her constantly questioning not just others' motives, but her own grasp on reality, a psychological tightrope walk between professional competence and personal disintegration. The novel masterfully explores how childhood trauma fundamentally reshapes our understanding of safety and trust. For Chloe, fear isn't abstract. It's embodied in specific memories, sensations, and triggers that constantly threaten to overwhelm her. She describes how her understanding of monsters evolved from childish shadows under the bed to the horrifying realization that real monsters move in plain sight. This awareness has made her hyper-vigilant, constantly scanning for threats in everyday situations, from the way a stranger's smile doesn't quite reach their eyes to the subtle shift in tone that precedes violence. Willingham captures the physical manifestations of Chloe's anxiety with visceral precision. The racing heart, the constricted breathing, the overwhelming need to escape. These episodes aren't merely dramatic devices, but authentic representations of how trauma lived in the body. When Chloe visits Aubrey's crime scene at Cypress Cemetery, her reaction isn't just emotional distress, but a full-body response. "My blood runs cold" isn't metaphorical, but a genuine sensation of terror. The author details how Chloe's hands shake when holding her coffee cup, how her throat constricts during confrontations, and how her muscles remain tensed even in seemingly safe spaces. The novel also explores how trauma warps time, collapsing past and present in moments of stress. When Chloe hears Aaron Jansen ask, "Is there something you need to tell me?" the exact words her father spoke to her mother before his arrest, she experiences a disorienting blend of past and present. These temporal distortions reflect how traumatic memories aren't filed away neatly, but remain vivid and intrusive, ready to be triggered by similar circumstances. Simple sounds, a door slamming, raised voices, even certain songs on the radio can instantly transport Chloe back to moments of childhood terror. Perhaps most poignantly, the novel examines how Chloe's childhood experiences have shaped her professional identity. She became a psychologist not despite her trauma, but because of it, a way to make sense of her experiences and help others. "I understand trauma firsthand," she explains, positioning her painful past as a source of empathy and insight. Yet this same history makes her vulnerable, blurring the boundaries between helping others and seeking her own healing. Her colleagues notice how she takes certain cases too personally, how she sometimes pushes too hard to protect her patients, and how her own unresolved trauma surfaces in her therapeutic relationships. The author weaves throughout the narrative how Chloe's hyper-awareness of danger manifests in seemingly ordinary moments, the way she always sits facing the door in restaurants, how she memorizes exit routes in new buildings, and how she instinctively catalogs potential weapons in every room she enters. These survival mechanisms, while born of trauma, have become both a burden and a tool in her investigation of Aubrey's disappearance. Identity and deception form the psychological core of A Flicker in the Dark. Every major character wears a mask, hiding crucial aspects of themselves from others, creating a complex web of personas that blur the line between authenticity and performance. Chloe presents herself as a successful, healed professional while secretly struggling with prescription medication dependency and debilitating anxiety. Daniel projects stability and unwavering support while concealing not only his knowledge of Chloe's past, but his own carefully constructed identity. Aaron Jansen's facade as an investigative journalist masks deeper, more sinister motivations that slowly unravel throughout the narrative. These layers of deception raise profound questions about how well we can ever truly know another person, or even ourselves. Chloe's constant self-examination reveals the depth of her identity crisis. She obsessively searches for signs of her father's darkness in herself, analyzing every aggressive thought or dark impulse as potential evidence of inherited evil. This genetic determinism haunts her daily life, from her choice of profession to her hesitation about having children. Her fear of becoming like him creates a perpetual state of hypervigilance in her relationships, particularly with Daniel. When she discovers Aubrey's necklace in their closet, her immediate leap to suspicion reflects not just circumstantial evidence, but her fundamental belief that intimacy itself might be dangerous. The novel masterfully explores how trauma can fracture identity into before and after versions of the self. Chloe's sense of self was irreparably shattered at 12 when her father was arrested, forcing her to reconstruct who she is in relation to his crimes. She navigates adult life with this broken mirror of identity, seeing herself simultaneously as victim, survivor, and potential perpetrator. She describes feeling like a cliché, the damaged daughter of a killer who became a psychologist to heal herself, while recognizing that this self-awareness doesn't free her from the pattern, but rather highlights how our narratives about ourselves can both explain and constrain us. Most chillingly, the novel examines how killers construct alternative identities to move through society undetected, maintaining elaborate facades that fool even their closest family members. Chloe's father perfected this duality, the loving parent who attended school functions and tucked her into bed at night while simultaneously hunting teenage girls. This profound deception, the caring father who helped with homework versus the predator who buried bodies in the woods, represents the ultimate betrayal of trust. It's this duality that continues to haunt Chloe's ability to trust her own perceptions and judgment, creating a perpetual state of uncertainty about the true nature of everyone she encounters. The theme extends beyond individual characters to explore how communities themselves can wear masks, presenting idyllic surfaces while concealing dark undercurrents of violence, secrets, and collective guilt. Through this layered exploration of identity and deception, the novel suggests that, perhaps, we are all wearing masks of varying degrees, some protective, some deceptive, and some so convincing we forget they're there at all. Louisiana isn't merely a backdrop in A Flicker in the Dark, but an active character that shapes the narrative's mood and meaning. Willingham renders the state's distinctive geography with atmospheric precision, the muggy heat that clings to skin, the mysterious bayous where secrets can be buried, the decaying grandeur of historic homes. This vivid sense of place grounds the psychological horror in physical reality. Bro Bridge, the crawfish capital of the world, represents both innocent childhood memories and unspeakable horror for Chloe. She recalls spotting alligators and making moss wigs during carefree summers before everything changed. The town's small size magnified the impact of the murders. Everyone knew the victims, everyone became a suspect, and the Davis family became permanent pariahs. The novel contrasts Bro Bridge with Baton Rouge, where adult Chloe has attempted to reinvent herself. Her Garden District home represents her aspirations for normalcy, with its porch swing and conventional mailbox, attempts at creating the stable home she lost as a child. Yet even this space becomes contaminated when she discovers evidence linking Daniel to the murders, proving there's no geographical escape from her past. Perhaps most symbolically charged is Chloe's childhood home, abandoned after her father's arrest, but preserved like a time capsule. When she returns there in the novel's climax, she finds everything exactly as they left it, her father's lazy boy still in position, TV smudged with the same fingerprints. This frozen quality represents how trauma arrests psychological development, keeping parts of ourselves locked in the moment of catastrophe. The Louisiana State Penitentiary at Angola, where Chloe's father serves his life sentence, looms over the narrative even though we never directly see it. Its mere presence on highway signs triggers Chloe's anxiety, a reminder that some connections can never be severed. By embedding these psychological states in specific locations, Willingham creates a landscape where external settings mirror internal turmoil. A Flicker in the Dark explores how violence and trauma cascade through generations, creating patterns that can seem inescapable. Chloe's life has been defined by her father's crimes, not just through public stigma, but through the psychological inheritance of fear, distrust, and self-doubt. Her relationship with her brother Cooper reflects this shared burden. They are bound by experiences no one else can understand, yet simultaneously pulled apart by different coping mechanisms. The novel examines various forms of accountability for these generational wounds. Chloe's mother attempted suicide rather than face the implications of her husband's actions, leaving her children to manage both their father's crimes and their mother's abandonment. Cooper withdrew completely, while Chloe became hypervigilant and anxious. Neither approach fully resolves their trauma, suggesting that healing requires active confrontation rather than avoidance. Burt Rhodes represents another response to generational trauma, vengeful rage that perpetuates the cycle of violence. As Lena's father, his grief manifests as alcoholism, domestic violence, and obsession with punishing those connected to his daughter's death. His deterioration serves as a warning about how unprocessed trauma can consume a life. The novel also questions how communities respond to violence in their midst. Bro Bridge turned against the Davis family after Richard's arrest, treating them as accomplices rather than additional victims. This collective punishment reflects our discomfort with the gray areas of trauma, the recognition that victims and perpetrators sometimes share family trees, that innocence and complicity can coexist in complicated ways. Most provocatively, the novel asks whether we can ever truly separate ourselves from our family's legacy. Chloe's career choice, relationship patterns, and even her wedding venue selection are all influenced by her father's crimes. Her fear that she might carry his darkness raises profound questions about nature versus nurture, about whether we're doomed to repeat our parents' mistakes or can forge different paths. Chloe Davis exemplifies the unreliable narrator, not because she deliberately misleads readers, but because her perceptions are colored by trauma, medication, and psychological defense mechanisms. Her narrative oscillates between hyper-vigilant observation and significant blind spots, particularly regarding those closest to her. This unreliability creates the novel's central tension. We experience events through Chloe's perspective while simultaneously questioning her interpretation. Memory plays a crucial role in this unreliability. Chloe's recollections of her childhood shift throughout the novel, revealing new details as present circumstances trigger past associations. Her memories of Lena Rhodes, initially presented as straightforward, become more complex as she recalls specific interactions. This gradual unfolding mimics how trauma memories often resurface, not as coherent narratives, but as fragmented sensory impressions that coalesce over time. Chloe's self-medication further complicates her reliability. Her combination of Xanax, Ativan, and alcohol creates gaps in her awareness, like when she loses an entire day after taking pills from Aaron. These substances blur the line between genuine insight and paranoid projection, making readers question whether her suspicions about Daniel represent legitimate danger or pharmaceutical-induced paranoia. The novel also explores how we construct narratives to make sense of trauma. Chloe has built her understanding of her father's crimes around certain facts: that he collected trophies from his victims, that he confessed to save himself from the death penalty, that he blamed a darkness inside. When these foundational beliefs are challenged, her entire worldview threatens to collapse. This process mirrors how trauma survivors often create explanatory frameworks that, while not entirely accurate, provide essential psychological structure. Through Chloe's unreliable narration, Willingham suggests that truth in trauma isn't simply about factual accuracy, but about emotional authenticity. Even when Chloe misinterprets events, her fear and hypervigilance represent genuine responses to real danger. Her unreliability doesn't invalidate her experience, but highlights how trauma distorts perception while simultaneously sharpening certain instincts. Willingham offers a nuanced exploration of serial killer psychology without sensationalizing or simplifying these complex predators. Through Chloe's professional knowledge and personal experience, we learn how killers select victims, establish trust, maintain double lives, and rationalize their actions. The novel meticulously details how predators identify vulnerability, often targeting individuals who appear isolated or seeking validation. This educational component adds depth to the thriller elements, helping readers understand the warning signs without resorting to lurid exploitation. The novel emphasizes how predators exploit social conditioning and power dynamics, particularly in small communities where trust is assumed rather than earned. When Chloe recalls her father watching 15-year-old Lena at the crawfish festival, she recognizes his predatory gaze, something she couldn't name as a child but can identify as an adult psychologist. This evolution in understanding represents how predators count on their victims' innocence and society's reluctance to acknowledge danger, especially when the perpetrator holds a respected position in the community. The text explores how killers often choose public spaces for victim selection, knowing that social settings provide both cover and opportunity. Trophy taking emerges as a significant aspect of serial killer behavior, serving multiple psychological functions. The discovery that Aubrey and Lacey were both missing jewelry items, paralleling the box of trophies Chloe found in her father's closet 20 years earlier, provides both a plot point and psychological insight. These items represent power and control, allowing killers to relive their crimes and maintain a connection to their victims. The novel delves into how these trophies serve as tangible reminders of dominance, with each item carefully selected for its personal significance to the victim. Perhaps most chillingly, the novel explores how killers compartmentalize their violence from their everyday personas, creating what criminologists call mask of sanity. Chloe struggles to reconcile her loving father, the man who taught her to ride a bike and created bedtime stories, with the monster who murdered 6 girls. This duality represents the predator's ultimate deception, the ability to maintain a normal, even caring exterior while harboring homicidal impulses. The text examines how this split personality enables killers to function in society, often excelling in their careers and maintaining long-term relationships while conducting their crimes in parallel. Through the copycat killer concept, Willingham also examines how serial killers inspire imitators, a phenomenon known in criminology as contagion effect. Aaron/Tyler's obsession with recreating Richard Davis's crimes represents a disturbing reality, how certain killers achieve a cultural status that attracts disturbed individuals seeking similar notoriety. The novel explores how modern technology and media coverage can amplify this effect, creating detailed archives of previous crimes that potential copycats can study and emulate. This exploration of influence and inspiration adds another layer to the novel's psychological depth, highlighting how one killer's legacy can spawn a cascade of violence across generations. The book also examines the role of childhood trauma in shaping future predators, showing how early experiences of abuse or neglect can create patterns of behavior that evolve into violence. Through careful character development, Willingham demonstrates how killers often experience a gradual escalation in their crimes, beginning with smaller acts of cruelty before progressing to murder. The novel's resolution offers a complex vision of healing that avoids simplistic closure. When Chloe finally learns the truth, that her brother Cooper was the actual killer who manipulated their father into taking the blame, she faces the ultimate betrayal. Yet this devastating revelation also frees her from decades of uncertainty and self-doubt. By confronting the full truth rather than the partial narrative she'd constructed, she can begin authentic healing. Willingham suggests that recovery from trauma requires both truth and action. Chloe doesn't just passively receive information about Cooper's guilt, she actively participates in gathering evidence against him, recording his confession, and ensuring justice for his victims. This agency represents a crucial step in reclaiming her life from the shadow of his crimes. The novel also explores how healing often requires relinquishing symbols of false security. Chloe returns Daniel's engagement ring to his sister Sophie, recognizing that their relationship was built partly on mutual trauma rather than genuine compatibility. This sacrifice represents her growing ability to distinguish between authentic connection and trauma bonding. Perhaps most poignantly, the final image of Chloe catching and releasing a firefly symbolizes her evolving relationship with her past. The firefly recalls both Lena's belly button ring, a trophy her father took from Cooper's collection, and the novel's title, A Flicker in the Dark. By capturing the insect briefly before setting it free, Chloe demonstrates her ability to acknowledge her history without being imprisoned by it. This nuanced approach to healing avoids suggesting that trauma can be completely overcome or forgotten. Instead, Willingham presents recovery as an ongoing process of integration, learning to carry painful truths while refusing to be defined solely by them. Chloe will always be Richard Davis's daughter and Cooper's sister, but these relationships no longer constitute her entire identity. At its core, A Flicker in the Dark examines our cultural obsession with serial killers and the true crime genre. Through Chloe's perspective, we're forced to confront uncomfortable questions about why these stories captivate us and what this fascination reveals about our collective psyche. The novel neither condemns nor celebrates true crime enthusiasm, but explores its complex psychological underpinnings. Chloe herself embodies this ambivalence. As a trauma psychologist, she understands the damage caused by violent crime, yet she keeps a collection of true crime books that Daniel notices when they first meet. This contradiction reflects how many true crime enthusiasts balance genuine empathy for victims with curiosity about perpetrators. The media's role in sensationalizing violence receives particular scrutiny. Aaron Janssen's pursuit of a 20th anniversary story about Richard Davis's crimes represents how tragedy becomes content, how real suffering transforms into entertainment. Yet the novel also acknowledges media's potential for justice. The recording that ultimately captures Cooper's confession serves as crucial evidence. Most provocatively, Willingham suggests that our fascination with serial killers stems partly from our desire to believe monsters are identifiable, that we could recognize the predator in our midst. Chloe's childhood realization that real monsters move in plain sight challenges this comforting fiction, forcing us to acknowledge that killers often appear ordinary, even charming. Her father's double life as both loving parent and murderer represents our worst fear, that those closest to us harbor unimaginable secrets. Through this exploration, the novel asks whether our cultural obsession with true crime represents morbid voyeurism or a legitimate attempt to understand human darkness. Chloe's professional work suggests the latter possibility, that studying trauma can help prevent it, that facing our fears directly may ultimately prove more protective than avoiding them. In this sense, A Flicker in the Dark itself becomes a meta-commentary on the potential value of engaging with difficult material, provided we do so with empathy and ethical awareness.